minutes from February 4th. Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposition? Seeing none, the minutes are adopted from February 4th. With that, our first bill on the agenda is House File 531. We'll welcome Representative Swedzinski to the testimony table, and I will go ahead and move your House File 531 to be referred to the Committee on Taxes.
Thank you, Chair Sanders. I appreciate it.
Good morning and welcome.
I appreciate you hearing House File 531. We're bringing this bill forward really to rectify what I feel is kind of what the intent of the law is in the state of Minnesota, but it's not quite matching up with reality on the street, literally. As of now, entities such as cities, counties, municipalities, libraries that are state-owned or government-owned are tax-exempt. And under current law, construction companies, as they purchase construction materials, are not. And the way a construction process works, we have a deficiency of approximately $16 million that is falling through the cracks that should be tax-exempt when it comes to purchases of products that are not being exercised due to the complexity of the reimbursement process. Got with me some folks with the League of Minnesota Cities who are leading the charge on this bill, and I'd like them to also speak about the bill if there's any questions. Otherwise, we can go straight to some testifiers potentially.
Representative Nelson, would you prefer to ask your question here at the beginning?
The testifiers are done. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you, Representative Nelson. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Patrick Hines. I'm with the League of Minnesota Cities. Ben Martig, the city administrator from Marshall, was planning on joining us today, but the weather in his neck of the woods is pretty terrible today, so we told him to stay at home and we would handle it for him. He did provide a letter to the committee, which I believe is in your committee packets. I want to thank Representative Swedzinski for authoring this bill on behalf of the League and the many other organizations that support it. Those organizations include the Association of Minnesota Counties, the Minnesota Township Association, the School Boards Association, the Minnesota City Engineers, who have also supplied a letter, the Minnesota Municipal Utility Association, and Metro Cities. I'll go into a little detail about why we feel this is necessary. Under current law, construction materials purchased for a public facility, like a city hall or police station, are exempt from the sales tax. And the legislature reinstated that sales tax exemption in 2013 for cities and counties. If materials are purchased by a general contractor on behalf of a city or a tax-exempt entity, and it's part of a lump sum or guaranteed maximum price contract, those same materials are no longer exempt unless the city and the contractor follow a very complicated set of rules that the Department of Revenue has instituted over the past 30 years or so. And those rules are so complicated that many exempt entities like school districts or cities simply don't claim the sales tax exemption because the cost of claiming the exemption exceeds the savings you would get from purchasing the materials exempt. And the primary reason for these rules is to make sure that contractors are not purchasing exempt construction materials on behalf of a city and then using those materials on a private project when they should be taxed. So we understand that the Department of Revenue has an audit function and needs to ensure compliance with the law. But we feel that many of the requirements that are in place are simply unnecessary and overly burdensome. And so our bill would create a new process using the existing refund mechanism that the Department of Revenue has. We think that will provide ample oversight for the department and will streamline the process so that, as Representative Swedzinski said, we can really fulfill the intent of the law. I'll give you a few quick examples of what a city must do in order to claim the exemption. And first of all, the exemption, the exception for materials purchased in a lump sum contract or a guaranteed maximum price contract, those are essentially all of the construction contracts that are currently used today. These are the typical AIA form contracts that cities and other private entities use when building a construction project. So the rules really make you change general practice in the construction industry, which is a problem. The first thing a city has to do is they're required to issue separate bids, one bid for the labor, one bid for the materials. So instead of simply having a bid for a general contractor to respond to, you need to have multiple bids, and on a big project there could be dozens of material suppliers or subcontractors who would have to submit bids. In some instances, a city would have to award a different bid, one bid to one company who supplies materials and one who performs the labor. So a simple example would be if you were repaving a portion of road, you could end up with a situation where the contract for the material goes to Bob's Bituminous and the contract for the labor goes to Bill's Bituminous. And instead of having one person in charge of everything, you've now got two parties who may or may not have worked together, who may or may not like each other, and you're really increasing the inefficiency of the project and ultimately the cost. In order for a general contractor to purchase on behalf of a city, it is required to enter into a purchasing agent agreement, which again is different from your standard construction contracting. It is it adds administrative costs on the front end. And most importantly, the Department of Revenue requires that the risk of loss for the materials purchased have to be shifted from the general contractor to the city. And this really is the biggest concern that we have, because in a typical project, the city has one contract with the general contractor. He's responsible for getting the project done. If a problem arises, the city tells the general to take care of it. And from the city's perspective, it doesn't matter which subcontractor made a mistake or which supplier made a mistake. The general contractor is responsible to take care of that, and he has his own contracts so he can mitigate his risk. What happens under this process is now the city has to take the risk of loss for all these materials. So let's say if you were building a bridge, for instance, and you purchased structural steel for the bridge. If that structural steel is delivered late, it's going to cause a lot of delay, and it's going to cost money because you have all of the other contractors who have to perform work after that steel gets installed are on a schedule to do the work. If that schedule gets messed up, they're working on other jobs. That delay cost has to be borne by someone. And under this scenario that the Department of Revenue has set up, that cost gets borne by the city. And the risk of that is frankly worth more in many cases than the 6.5% sales tax savings you would get from buying the steel exempt. So cities just don't do it because there's too much risk involved and there's too much additional cost for the taxpayer. So what we've proposed, and we've worked with the Department of Revenue, we've had a number of meetings with them to try to figure out a better way to do it. And so what the bill would do is allow cities to claim the exemption through an existing refund system. This has been used on dozens of major projects that are specifically called out in statute in section 297A.70. There's a long list of, I think, 48 different projects that have used this process. And so a city would purchase the materials and pay the sales tax. Then after the project was complete, it would apply for a refund through the existing system. It would be much more streamlined. It wouldn't require cities to take on all the additional risk. Ideally, we would prefer the refund to be upfront, but doing it at the back end, we think, ensures that the Department of Revenue can get the information it needs to audit and would make it simpler and more cost-effective for cities to claim the exemption. And I one more thing. I say cities as a default since I work for the league, but it would apply to counties, townships, nonprofit organizations, and a number of other nonprofit hospitals that are listed on page one of the bill. That was a quick run through. If you have questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Excellent. Thank you, Mr. Hines. Representative Nelson, you're first on the list for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Swedinski. I guess with this, when I saw this bill and I'm reading through it, and it just brings me back to some of the issues that happened with the job Z zones. And I don't know if this might be an unintended consequence, and maybe a maybe I don't want to raise it, but the question got to be with the Job Z zones when it was originally passed, and again, they were exempting the building materials up front from sales taxes, and I remember, and maybe I remember it wrong, but there was an issue about that because they did that, that made them have to pay prevailing wage on all those Job Z building projects. And I don't know if that's an unintended consequence that we're walking into here again, requiring cities and all these groups of people, because we're a roundabout way exempting them from sales tax that they could end up having to pay prevailing wage on the project. And currently, these groups don't have to pay prevailing wage on the projects. And again, maybe because of my self-interest coming out of the building trades, I think that might be a good thing, but
sure.
I don't know if that's an unintended consequence that that you want to fall into.
Representative Swedzinski.
Chairman Sanders, Representative Nelson. I think that's something we'll look into. At this point in time, I don't know. I appreciate you bringing that up, though, and we'll try to get some more information back to you and then the rest of the committee. So,
thank you.
Appreciate you bringing that forward.
Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I don't exactly understand how it's different. So currently, under the current law, the contractor has to gather all the data and all the information and apply. No? And now it's just going to be the city that they're working for that would do it, or the entity they're working for.
Mr. Chair, members.
Representative Swedzinski.
Representative Runbeck. You know, under current law, the cities themselves are tax exempt. So if the cities were to go out and purchase the materials, they would have an upfront tax exemption. But by law, contractors by law have to pay sales tax. And so by the general nature of the way a project works, whether we're talking lump sum projects, so you say you're doing a contract, they're going out and they're generally purchasing all the materials, the contractor is. The city is not going to Home Depot and picking out 2x4s and 2x6s. If they were doing that, then this bill would not be necessary. But because of the nature is that you're actually sending a secondary person that you're under contract to from the city through a municipality or library, they're going out, they're doing the purchase on your behalf. And so that's essentially what we're trying to make, is that bridge connection, is that because you're sending secondary people out to do, through a contract, to do the purchasing, which you are currently tax exempt, would be a city, library, school. And because there's so much bureaucracy in that in-between, which is that passover. So when you're passing that 2x4 over to the city to build the project, that the paperwork involved in following up with the tax exemption and the risk, and we don't want to understate that risk portion, because, you know, is a city clerk qualified to say which 2x4 is straight, which one is, I mean, is that the person you want, or do you want the guy that has the ability to understand the materials and the quality of materials that are needed? And that risk-reward standpoint, because they know their insurance, they know what they're covered for, and they know that process. And this is essentially trying to build that bridge across the two entities so that I think legislative intent can be carried forward.
Representative Runbeck.
Mr. Chair, all right, so they're doing it for the city, and the contractor's buying the materials. They provide the city then with all the information, so the city is the applicant still.
Mm-hmm. The city will...
Yeah,
the,
okay. Yeah. And Mr. Chair,
Representative Runbeck,
the contractor is receiving the benefit of a sales tax exemption at the front end as they purchase.
Representative Swedzinski.
Mr. Chair, members, no. The at the point of purchase, the contractor will pay the sales tax, and then you take your receipts. You know, you have your receipt book of saying I've got this many yards of concrete, this many yards of whatever it is. You take that. You'll have a paperwork sheet. You take that to the city, and the city will have a mechanism to say, hey, in tune. Boom, and everyone's reimbursed. So,
all right, thank you.
Ultimately, this is about property taxes. You know, the city of Marshall, the letter in your packet talked about a large project that they did, over $9 million, $400,000 of sales tax. You know, where does that money come from?
Thank you, Representative Swedzinski. Mr. Carlson, looks like you had requested to testify. Why don't you come up and do that, and then we'll move on to the rest of our member questions. Welcome to the committee. If you would, just state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. My name is Keith Carlson. I'm Executive Director of the Minnesota Intercounty Association that consists of 10 of the regional center counties in greater Minnesota and four of the ring counties here within the Twin City metropolitan area. I appear in support of this bill. As has been indicated, this would vastly simplify and frankly make available what is almost generally never available to local governments, including counties right now, and that's the sales tax exemption on the purchase of these materials. Because of all the hoops that have to be jumped through, and most importantly, because the county, city, school district has to assume liability for the suitability, the performance of those materials, it's almost never utilized under current law. This is particularly important with regards to road construction projects, which I understand is a priority for this session. With passage of this bill, the cost for city, county, township road projects would go down by 6 7/8% on all the construction materials purchased for those projects. Right now, invariably, the engineers, the cities, the counties, and the townships do not choose to use the available exemption, again, because of the complication, but most importantly, because of the shifting of the responsibility. In almost all construction contracts that we're talking about, the general contractor files a performance bond as part of the obligations under that contract. And if the materials prove to be not perform as indicated, the city, the county, the township has recourse directly against the contractor through that performance bond. Because of the current law's provisions that you have to separate the erection, construction of the project from the materials, that performance bond is no longer available for the county, the city, or the township to go against if there's some failure in the materials. So again, it's never utilized. So this would be a significant issue for the objectives of, I think, this session of enhancing transportation funding during this session. With that, I'll conclude. Be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. Next on the list, I have Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm actually going to phone a friend and ask Ms. Dyson to help me with the definition on line 1.15 of the bill itself. Ms. Dyson, my question is, under 297A.7, subdivision 2, what is the definition of a local government?
Ms. Dyson, we'll give you a second if you need to.
Madam Chair and Representative Albright, I believe that the tax analyst from House Research, Ms. Pat Dalton, is available to explain the definitions and can do it more quickly.
We'll do a double phone a friend here. And Ms. Dalton, thank you very much for being in the committee today. Please state your name for the record.
I'm Pat Dalton with House Research, and I do the sales taxes. The definition for local government for tax-exempt purposes is a changing definition for the next 3 years. Currently, it covers school districts, counties, cities, and townships. Beginning July 1 of 2015, it will also include all special taxing districts except the Met Council, and it will include all instrumentalities of local governments, which include some of the joint powers and some of the other things that are not directly part of the local government. And then beginning July 1 of 2016, it will also cover the Met Council.
Thank you, Ms. Dalton. Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Dalton, in light of that, then, we have a number of very large construction projects in Minneapolis and St. Paul that have been undertaken in years past. I cite specifically the new stadium in Minneapolis. Would that fall under one of these special taxing districts?
Ms. Dalton?
Mr. Chair, Representative, the Viking Stadium actually has its own special sales tax exemption. Oh. So it's not affected by this one way or the other.
Thank you.
Any other member questions? Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Swazinski, thank you for bringing this forward, and if you've taken a look at the bill, I'm a co-author on this. I'm just going to give you some firsthand perspective and experience on why this bill is an important item from my local government days. First and foremost, what we need to keep in mind is that we're taking taxpayer dollars that are generated at the local level through property taxes or state transfer payments to county aid or local government aid, and the cities are going out and or counties or school districts and making purchases that would otherwise be subject to sales tax. So there's an automatic 6.5% cost that or better that's being paid, almost 7%, and in some communities that they have local option sales tax, it even goes on top of that to pay for materials. And so what we're doing is we're taking tax dollars to pay sales tax to give it back to the state of Minnesota, who will then decide if it comes back to them in local government aid or comes and how that gets spent. It's just kind of, if you think about spreadsheet analysis, it's a circle formula that just doesn't work. And so trying to solve this problem is noteworthy and a noble cause, in my opinion. One of the things that I want to just point out about materials insurance liability that's associated with the city picking up the costs and being the sponsoring entity and the responsible entity for materials. You get into, and I have had situations where we've had to mediate and negotiate between contractors. You've got the architect or the engineer who designs it. You've got the contractor who bids it, you've got the material supplier who supplies it, and you've got the labor that's associated with it. And guess what happens when you get in a room? It's always the other person's fault. And so what this does is this takes the cities out of this. It lets the contractor who's going to be performing the work to pick the materials, be responsible for the materials, and then the city can hold them liable for the use of materials and meeting the construction standards on that. You also get into the fact that the local entity will most likely be involved in doing the inspections on that, and they're the owners of the materials, and so you get into some again, circle formula issues about who's going to have responsibility. If you want to have the contractor's insurance and liability insurance cover those materials, they have to be responsible for the ownership of that. It won't come from them to the city. The city would end up having to do that. Most cities are insured by the League of Minnesota Cities, which may or may not cover that kind of construction depending upon what their policy looks provisions are and the type of project. So thank you, Representative Swazinski, for bringing this forward. And members, I would encourage you to support it. It may not be in its final form, but the idea is very good public policy, in my opinion.
Representative Lane.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I, too, want to say thank you for bringing this. I see in our packet here, Marshall, Minnesota, is giving an example of the cost that could be saved. And I did receive a call from Columbia Heights City Manager, my district, saying that we are building a new library. We're right in the beginning stages of that, and this could save $300,000. It's huge for a small city.
Thank you, Representative Lane. Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just another question. In the definitions, the new language, 1.21, okay, it mentions nonprofit groups, and I'm just wondering what the rationale is and what that definition is.
We'll go straight to Ms. Dalton.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, Representative Runbeck, nonprofits are the same nonprofits who have a general sales tax exemption, so they are nonprofits that are organized specifically for religious, educational, and charitable purposes. This is not all 501c3s. There are some things that do qualify as 501c3s, but do not get that get an income tax exemption in the state, but do not get a sales tax exemption in the state. If you actually want a list, I do actually have a list from the Department of Revenue of what qualifies and doesn't qualify, and I can give it to your page to have it photocopied.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair,
Ms. Dalton, Representative Brumbeck.
That would be desirable. Thank you. I just to follow up then on line 1.24, well, there's two different definitions of nursing homes, and the one on 1.24, what type of a nursing home environment is that?
Ms. Dalton?
Mr. Chair and Representative Runbeck, you are correct. Hospitals and nursing homes are listed twice, mm-hmm. and that's because at one time we exempted hospitals and nursing homes that were publicly owned. so like county nursing homes and county hospitals. Mm-hmm. And then we later did a separate one for all nursing homes and nonprofit hospitals. So as long as they meet the Department of Health and Human Services licensing requirements, they qualify for the exemption.
Okay, well, Mr. Chair.
Representative Rumbach.
And Ms. Dyson, Ms. Dalton. So a for-profit facility would not be eligible for this, would it?
Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, Representative Rumbach, I believe a for-profit hospital would not, but I don't think we have any for-profit hospitals in this state. I think all nursing homes qualify.
All right, thank you.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess the question I have, and I know we're not a finance committee, I'm assuming there's going to be a revenue note and a tax
The bill is going to taxes next.
Yeah. So, I mean, just is there somebody here from revenue that could that would have anything to say about this, where how it's going to affect them? Is there going to be a cost to them?
Anyone from revenue here willing to take the plunge? Revenue is here, but says they do not have any information to share at the time. Ms. Dalton, did you want to add anything, since you will see this in its next stop?
Mr. Chair, our understanding is that we do have a rough revenue estimate from this bill that was introduced in 2014. And it would cost about $16.9. What I wanted to make sure is whether it's actually identical. Yes, it is. So, yeah, it was $16.9 million.
Thank you, Ms. Dalton. Representative Nelson, any follow-up? Okay, great. Representative Tice.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Swazinski. Again, I just want to say thank you again. I've been notified, or I've received an email from the city administrator in St. Cloud saying this is a good thing. So, again, I appreciate you doing this. And, again, being in the building industry, anytime we can clarify what's in statute and make it easier for everybody concerned, not only do the projects go better, but everybody wins in the long run. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Tice. Representative Mullery.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Pat.
This is the last time you'll be coming to this committee, I'm sure.
Since I'm not on tax, I got to ask you some questions like I used to. This just popped into my mind because of the mess on light rail. Is Three Rivers Parks considered a part of local government under this? Because under this thing on light rail, they now had to step in because they weren't local government and couldn't be part of the discussion until after all the other local governments. So I'm just wondering, is this like that or is this different?
Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, Representative, Three Rivers Parks is, I believe, a special district, and so will be covered by this beginning July 1, 2015.
Is there anyone in the audience that wishes to time out? We'll go back to Ms. Dalton.
I'm sorry, I misspoke. It's actually January 1, 2016 that they will begin being covered.
Is there anyone in the audience that wishes to testify for or against the bill? Okay. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Kelleher. If you could, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Grace Kelleher, and I represent the Minnesota School Boards Association. We represent every locally elected school board from around the state, and we're here to offer our support on this bill. Our folks have found it so complex, we don't use it, and it's unfortunate to have something in law that allows it and then have a system that is so incredibly complex, you're ready to leave that money on the table. So that this would go forward is a big deal to my folks, and we'd appreciate your positive vote on this. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you for your testimony. Anyone else in the audience? Seeing none, any further member questions? Seeing none, Representative Swadzinski, any closing remarks?
Just appreciate your support, and I think we're referring this to taxes, if I'm not mistaken. Thank you.
With that, I will renew my motion that House File 531 be referred to the House Committee on Taxes. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? House File 531 is passed and referred to taxes. Next on our agenda is House File 510. That will be Representative Pugh, and since you are a member of the committee, Representative Pugh will let you move the bill and get started.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Thanks for the opportunity to present this very simple bill. House File 510 is a technical fix to a Hennepin County law that was actually passed in 2009. And Mr. Chair, I do have an amendment that I would like to add to get the bill in the shape that it needs to be in.
Okay, I will move House File 510 be referred to the General Register. And Representative Pugh moves the A1, which is an author's amendment to put the bill in the shape that she would like. Representative Pugh, I don't know if you want to just give us a quick overview of what the amendment does.
It actually clarifies the language and makes it consistent with the bill that is already on the floor in the Senate. It just adds one small component, the Hennepin County Human Resources Board, to the jurisdiction of this bill.
Members, any discussion to the author's amendment? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The amendment is adopted. Representative Pugh, the bill is in front of the committee in the shape that you would like.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So in 2009, Representative Zellers actually carried this bill that made technical changes to Hennepin County's Human Resources Department policies and procedures. And in short, the bill streamlined several very antiquated Human Resources Department procedures. It changed three things: who established the length of probationary periods for some employees, changed how some non-disciplinary HR rule violations were handled, and thirdly, allowed the county board to approve compensation plans. So these changes were necessary because Minnesota statutes governing the county's human resources department, some of which were written in the 60s, were very outdated and restrictive and cumbersome. So passing the law gave the county the flexibility and just created some efficiencies in the department. So the bill passed the legislature, and Governor Pawlenty actually signed it into law, and the county board passed a resolution, which I have copies of if any members of the committee are interested, making the law effective. And they've been following this law ever since. What's somewhat unusual about this is the bill included a local approval component, a clause. And by statute, local authority or local approval is not required by counties of over 1 million people, which, of course, Hennepin County is. But nonetheless, this particular bill did include that particular approval. So what happened is the county board passed this resolution, but for some reason, it wasn't officially filed with the Secretary of State. So all this bill really does is it extends the filing period from retro back to 2009, and allows the county, or requests that the county actually send a copy of the resolution into the Secretary of State's office by a specified date. So the bill, Mr. Chair, has already passed out of the committee and onto the floor in the Senate, and it has approval from everybody. So it really is a very simple technical fix of a bill.
Thank you, Representative Pugh. Mr. Peterson, anything to add at this time?
Mr. Chairman, Kirk Peterson, Rice-Meckles and Walt, representing Hennepin County. I don't have anything to add unless there are technical questions from the committee.
My one question, again, and we discussed it, but just to get on the record, this will fix this kind of once and for all. I just want to make sure that we're not going to run into this scenario again in the future. Mr. Peterson or Representative Pugh?
Mr. Chairman, members, for this bill, no, this is the end of it. We'll go back. It'll be retroactive, and all the filing requirements will be met. As Ms. Dyson did point out, this has happened before. This isn't a unique situation. It's somewhat unusual. It does happen, but there will be no further action required on this particular law.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Pugh, thank you for bringing the bill forward. It's a good bill. And I just want to point out to Representative O'Driscoll, it's not a labor bill.
Any other member questions? Seeing none, I will let you have any closing comments, Representative Pugh, if you have any.
Well, I just ask the committee for their support. Just a really clean, simple, technical fix of a bill.
Excellent. Thank you. Any further discussion? Seeing none, I'll renew my motion that House File 510 be referred to the General Register as amended. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? House File 510 is referred to the General Register. Thank you, Representative Pugh and Mr. Peterson. With that, members, we've concluded today's agenda. We have three bills on the agenda for tomorrow, and then on Thursday, the subcommittee of the MAC Council will be meeting in this room during this committee time on Thursday. So there will be no full committee meeting on Thursday. With that, we are adjourned.